This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast, the greatest, most enchanting lacrosse podcast in all the land, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and is currently the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. Coach, how's it going, buddy?
Going good, man. Enchanting. I heard the word enchanting. I don't think you've used that one.
Yeah, it's a new one.
Is this episode 20? I feel like we might.
Yeah, yeah.
Was this an anniversary? Do we do a party for this one? Or is it 25?
Maybe we could do something for 25.
25. Okay. See what the 106.7 will do for us.
Yeah, right. I can't even get stats from them. I need to hit them up again.
Trust me, I know. My paycheck must have got lost in the mail. But,
yeah, mine too.
No, all good. Friday here, and another week in the pandemic, but slowly getting back to I feel like I say it every week, but
we're inching closer.
Yeah, well, Maryland just announced, right? They said that some sports can, they're giving sports
two things. Yeah, so I think the state basically said that it's up to each individual county or whatever. They can do whatever they want sports wise. Of course, Montgomery County's insane, and they're doing it at their own rate, which that's a story for another day. But also, the governor, I believe, signed some sort of declaration that kids don't have to worry about masks when they're playing sports. Thank God.
Zero to 18. What I think has something to do with the Association of Pediatric, doctors said that, like, following that recommendation, that you don't have to wear a mask under the age of 18, which is helpful. You know, it's really hard to give walk around campus in a mask, let alone, condition in one.
No, it's ridiculous. As my son said when he's running in school, that it's like being waterboarded, You're running a mile or 2 miles, and you're just drenched in sweat, and you got that mask just over you. It's just insane.
Right. So, that's good. That's a
good
step.
Stuff.
That's a step in the right direction. Obviously, we're still in a holding pattern, like you said, in Montgomery County. But I know you wanted to bring the college coaches think we're going to play, right?
Well,
so is that a step in the right direction?
Well, I think so. I mean, first of all, we saw the Big Ten turnaround, right? Now the Pac-12 has decided they're back.
Mountain West
is back.
Yep.
And then I saw today in Florida, they basically opened up everything. All restaurants, all businesses, everything's open. And that's just going to start to happen more and more. You just have to learn to manage these kind of things. So we have to get back to normal. We have to get our kids back to school. And I know
our guest Rick Beardsley would agree with you.
He would agree very strongly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But look, I mean, you had a club season this summer. I didn't hear of any massive outbreak or any significant incident. I know my daughter plays volleyball. She's been playing volleyball for months indoors at a club here, and they've had tournaments.
Knock on wood. We've done a lot of outside stuff, so we hope that continues. And obviously, a lot of schools around in this area are starting to get back and open up, at least the independent private schools. And so, as long as this stuff keeps going well, we'll see.
Good.
So,
we're heading in the right direction. And you mentioned that poll. So I saw Inside Lacrosse. Let me pull it up here. They asked coaches how optimistic they were about having a spring season. And women's coaches were actually slightly more optimistic. The 29% of the women's coaches were
that doesn't surprise me.
Were highly optimistic.
People.
61% were moderately optimistic. 8% low. 2% of the college coaches on the women's side thought there'd be no season. Only 2%. But on the men's side, high optimism, 24%, moderately optimistic, 63%, low, just 12%, and 0% thought there'd be no season. So on the men's side, everyone is in agreement. They think there's going to be a season this year. And how could there not be? With football being back, they've announced plans for basketball to come back. I was watching just the other day on the internet, and I have a friend who's actually going to an ACC volleyball game today. I mean, come on. It's going to happen.
No, I think so. I mean, obviously it's a trickle down effect. You hope college lacrosse happens, so high school lacrosse, or is it a trickle up effect? I don't really know. Obviously, the high school is more regionalized. At least that was my thought process back when the pandemic started in March. But I think you're right. I mean, obviously they'll have to figure out the travel piece, and some of these smaller schools with testing and but hopefully by the springtime it might be delayed. We had Keegan on last week, and I think it will be delayed, which I don't think is a bad thing. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing for high school. I'm excited to start lacrosse in middle of March and play in April and May.
Yeah, but
and June.
I don't want
awesome.
Some truncated season.
Of course, like, I don't either.
What's the Pac-12? Are they playing 7 games or something? Crazy? Yeah.
Well, no, I know, but beggars can't be choosers. I want games, and I want as many as I can get, and I want to coach my kids up. And if they tell me 8, those are going to be the 8 best games we ever can have. But you're right. Of course we want 16 games or
right.
10, 12 games at a college level, that'll be a lot to, digest if that's what they can get. And even some teams have kind of scaled their schedule back, not as play as many games because lacrosse is such a physical sport. So we'll see. I think, hopefully those coaches that are optimistic are right. You know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, I think it's going to happen. All right. So we have a great guest today. We're going to be a short little intro because Rick Beardsley joins us, and Rick is a 4-time All-American. He'll tell you so. From Syracuse, won 2 national championships there. He's just sort of an absolute monster in the game.
I mean, a legend. I mean, there's like
really a legend.
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously your intro does it, but as coaches on the coaching scene and club circuit and, just a really strong personality
and a really
warm guy, great guy. Yeah. And, if you're on his good side, I mean, it's a great, good side to be on. He's a really, in a lot of ways down to earth and involved in a lot of things, right? Girls lacrosse, boys lacrosse, pro lacrosse. So,
yeah. And we touch on all that.
Great conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a great conversation coming up with Rick Beardsley. So don't go anywhere. All right, guys, it's our pleasure to introduce another absolute monster in the game of lacrosse. He's a 4-time All-American at Syracuse University. He was part of 2 national championship teams in 1993 and 1995. He was named to the NCAA All-Tournament team in 95. He was a captain his senior year. He was a member of the gold medal-winning 1992 U.S. Under-19 World Team. He played in the NLL with the New York Saints and then the MLL with the Rochester Rattlers. He helped coach the PLL Atlas this summer in the bubble in Utah, and he's the head coach at Christian Brothers Academy in New York. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rick Beardsley. Rick!
I'm going to applaud myself, guys. I appreciate that. Thanks very much. Wow.
How cool
is
that?
I know I can see the video, but my head just went bigger and bigger and bigger. How are you
all
guys
good
today? Thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it, fellas.
No, it's a pleasure. And Danny and I were talking about it for a while. We always want to have good, interesting guests, and your name keeps popping up. And Danny, why don't you tell your story of your first introduction to Rick?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that everyone in the lacrosse world has a Rick Beardsley story, probably, good and bad. Rick, I don't know if you remember, and I want to get it right. I think it was a Capital event up at Albany, recruiting event.
Capital Challenge, yep.
We used to do it when
Steve and I had United, yep.
Yes, exactly. So it's probably, probably 5-6 years ago now.
Were you at Robert Morris?
Yeah,
coaching?
At the time, right? Yeah. And it was the hottest summer in the world. So all I remember is sitting in my car. It was 105 degrees. And Rick was awesome. They were I remember you had us out for wings and just doing a good job of being accommodating for coaches, but still start getting to know Rick. And I walk by one of the fields and he's just like walking the inline and just like screaming at kids to make sure they chop their arms, you know, at the defense. And I'm just like, this is amazing. Like, this is like the greatest thing I've ever seen. And obviously then, you know, do a little bit of background and realize, you know, what type of defenseman he was. And obviously, easy to motivate the kids, and we had to get him on, and yeah. Now here we are. So,
because yeah, I remember,
now, guys, I'm gonna just cut in quick before yeah. you get going, because that's just typically me. But I don't, you know, it's weird, Dane, to hear you talk about like what kind. I don't know. I look back, and what often gets me through the Stairmaster workouts at lunch is the YouTubes. Yeah. So, I've been, you know, more and more, I've been able to do, you know, 40, 50 minutes. You know, it keeps it going, and. I don't know if I was as violent as everybody really thought I was, or maybe I didn't. I watched the videos. I don't think I was so bad. I mean, I did take shots at guys like when you could, meaning
right.
guy after a shot, you blew him up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, guy came through the middle after you scored, his hands are up, you cross checked him in the chest, or you ground ball on the crease. I gotta decline this guy. It's a cascade rep. He's out of his mind. To get me back.
Yeah, you're good.
I didn't know that we had a Zoom meeting, so I don't really care either way. But, you know, you end up with a, you know, a product of just being a product of your environment. And I think it was, you know, I don't know if I played so – you were supposed to play intimidating, and I guess that's intimidating. I mean, I took swings when I could take a swing, and I took a penalty when I thought it was a good time. I mean, that's probably not something anybody wanted to hear. But, you know, Coach Simmons used to say, if a guy took a shot, put him on his ass. You know, and okay,
right.
if he's good with me blowing up a guy and it's completely legal, I'm not going to get arrested, then why not? You know, right. So, I mean, you have to grow up like that, I think. You know, you have to have parents who probably smacked you a little too much, you know. But yeah, no, it's funny that to hear you say that. I do look at the old games and think I didn't swing that much, but then I now think about it. Yeah, I tried to physically assault people if I could right. within the rules.
Yeah, I mean, it's all in the eyes of the beholder, right? Maybe people don't yeah. know lacrosse.
Yeah,
for me,
it isn't violence, actually.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's playing the game.
Did you grow up playing football?
Yeah, I was a three-sport guy, mm-hmm. but I played everything growing up. I happened to just be in my hometown this morning. I drove into my parents are buried in my hometown. So I just went and cleaned up some stuff, but I drove past like Yorktown High School, which was our biggest rival. Last week I drove home cause our daughters play lacrosse here on the island. Even though we live 5 hours away, I stopped in Yorktown, got like Maria's pizza. Angela had a chance to try it with her friend Francesca. And you know, so I've been getting through more and more, and I stopped at my old high school. They have like turf now. It's not like manhole covers on the field. And so it's, you know, it's Westchester County that I grew up in. It's not the Westchester everybody thinks it is, to be frank.
So my first introduction to you, Rick, was my son played a club for a club here in DC, you know, Next Level. And we mm-hmm. played against you. I can't remember what tournament it was, but were you coaching? Is it Upstate Black or something like that? Was there?
Yeah, we played. So I had a team that we threw together, which go figure, no one would ever do that in Syracuse, right? Where you take
right.
all the three clubs that apparently don't like each other. I didn't give a shit what anybody else thought, but
right.
I just did my job. But there was other clubs that, and I combined all of the best guys in the 19 group that I could find in Upstate.
Right.
And it turned out to be a really good bunch of guys. I mean, guys going to Yale, you know, Albany, you know, St. Joseph's, you know, Lehigh. I mean, we had a plethora of guys that were really good. And then obviously the other club coaches got whiff of it and they squashed it. But yes, that was out here.
Yeah.
It was at Sachem, right? It was like the club national championships.
Something. It was something. And I just remember you get there early on the grass, you park your car and everything, and there's Rick over there, and I didn't really know who Rick was. I had to learn, and then Rick's like in a tank top. It's like 8 a.m. He's like screaming at people, and I was like, "Who is this guy?"
I did wear a tank top in that. I had one custom made with a flat brim hat, and it flipped up.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking, but I guess I was just thinking, yeah. I mean, it was fun as hell, and it was hot. All I wanted was a tan and some pizza.
Right, right. Oh, that's hilarious. So talk to us a little bit about, because we want to get into your whole story, but we want to talk mostly, or start off with your experience with the PLL and the Atlas this summer, what that was all about in the bubble. We loved it, watching it. We thought it was incredible.
Yeah. Sick.
How did you get involved in it? Because I don't think you were with the PLL in the first year, right?
No.
And how did that come about?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough that I'm in a tech string. We call it the Derelicts R Us tech string. And it happens to be some really big coaches, at least in the pro world, in the college world. We're in this fantasy football league. And I'm an awful fantasy football guy, but I joined it just for the text message chirps, truth be told. So I basically give away $250 a year in order to just talk shit to my friends. And it's like a safe zone. So like everybody's fair game. I mean, you don't even want to know, but
who's in it? So who's in the league with you?
So you have, you know, like Tom Mariano, you know, you have Doc, you know, so they're all MLL coaches, Joe Spallina, you know, Matt Panetta, Andy Towers, Dennis Goldstein, myself, Panutz's stepson, Nolan Gottfried, who lives on the West Coast, Jimmy Harkin, and Ryan Danahay. I think that's our 11 that we have
big
in.
Names.
And what'd you say?
So there's some big names.
Yeah, there's some good names in there. So there's often names getting tossed around when guys got let go. Who's going to get a job? What are you hearing? So Roy Culcy had initially interviewed for the position that Tim Sudan got. And he called me and said, would you be my assistant? And Roy and I grew up together since we were 5 years old. I mean, we played Little League sports. I was in his wedding. He was in mine. He was my college teammate, my roommate. And I said, absolutely. I would love to, you know, let me just figure out what the schedule's like. And then I had heard that he wasn't going to get the job. And Ben Rubior's name got tossed in our string. And I know Ben, I'd met him. You know, at an NLF event at IMG, and I got along pretty well with Ben. And I shot him my resume and an email saying, hey, Ben, I'd like to be involved. I may not be the greatest coach in the world, but I can bring a lot of intangibles to the table. You know, I often know what those intangibles are now. It certainly isn't the coaching aspect of it, because in my defense, you don't have to coach much. You have four defensive coordinators, so you're kind of good there. All you have to do is manage it, kind of yell and scream at them, and hopefully they respect you at the end of the day. But so Ben was like, that's a great idea. Let me, you know, pitch it to the league. And he pitched it to the league. And, you know, I went through a quick phone call with him. I just had to move some games around. Obviously, coronavirus hit, and that ended everybody's season. So that's really how I got the job. I'm very fortunate to have known Ben. I have a ton of respect for Ben, and I'm not saying it, guys. If you know me, I would tell you if I didn't like a person or liked a person, even if I worked with them right now. I mean, Ben is one of the greatest minds in the game. I haven't met a speaker who's as good as him since Coach Simmons at rallying the troops, and you know, and he's an overall great person. Mm-hmm. And then Steve and I've already known. I've known Steve forever. We're Syracuse guys, right? So it was a natural meshing of the three of us. And then, you know, obviously coronavirus hit. We were talking every day, every week to these guys on Zooms. And, you know, there were some just Zoom happy hours that got a little rowdy. And everybody stayed up till about 1:30 in the morning with music. And my wife, you know, was screaming at me down, you know, to shut up downstairs. you know, you're so loud. And but, you know, It was a great experience just to be on the team, and then to go into the bubble when Paul and Michael and the rest of the league figured out what they were going to do, you know, and started to bring that to the forefront. You know, it was certainly interesting. It was certainly nerve wracking at times when you're taking your test and you just want to do it so bad, right? And your normal everyday life could take that away from you, right? Just going to the grocery store, you could risk getting, you know, coronavirus. And I have two children and a wife. My wife works, she's a teacher, and the kids play sports, and I'm doing clinics, and I sell apparel for a living. And I mean, you two sports, and you end up worrying a little bit, but you're going out doing your life. And you know, it was pretty stressful. But when we got to you know, to Utah, you know, the protocols were great. I really didn't think about it as being in a bubble. We all had our moments of where we, I guess we got frustrated and lost it, guys. I mean, I did when Angela had her first, our oldest daughter had her first showcase, I couldn't go there. And if I was not in a bubble, I'd be home. Then the next week I'd fly to wherever the heck we had a game.
Right.
And that really hit me, truth be told, because I missed a lot of her life. You know, Dane, as you know, when I was with United, we did a lot of things. I missed a lot of her life being a club coach. And, you know, she was become a pretty good lacrosse player from what a lot of people tell me. I still think she sucks, but but I look at pro athletes on a daily basis. And my wife was, you know, on the verge of being in the Olympics as a swimmer. You know, she got sick herself and was number one in the world in breaststroke and ended up missing it by like a quarter of a second. But so for me, that was a really the toughest time for me. But the rest of it was fun, guys. I mean, the athletes are big, strong. I learned a lot about nutrition, about how to take care of your body. The athletes did get beat up. The product you saw, which, by the way, everybody, and thank you, everybody really enjoyed it. Yeah. The PLL does an incredible job.
Yeah.
If you were to see their marketing like wing, it's like 30, 20 somethings and like 15 other really high level professional television guys. So that product you see was well thought out. It was safe. It was really fun. And it was really tough on the athletes. It wasn't tough on the coaches, I don't think. I mean, bodies were falling apart. Even guys who were in peak physical condition.
Right.
A lot of hip injuries. A lot of, you know, your toenails falling off because of turf toe and it being so hot. A lot of that happened. But overall, I'm looking forward to hopefully not being in a COVID situation moving forward. And we were lucky enough to be kept one more year. We didn't have the greatest tournament, but we will hopefully rebound and we will, you know, hook them horns.
Well, obviously we want to see, we love the bubble product. We've had other PLL guys on here and like push, like we might have to go back to it just from a viewer standpoint to be able to see that much lacrosse.
Yeah, do a regular season and then do a tournament, you know, like
sick,
that.
Just to see that much. Yeah. Yes. See that much. Lacrosse.
There's rumors, guys, there's rumors that there might be one in the winter.
Right. That'd be amazing.
And I can't, listen, that isn't me like hint, hint, wink, wink.
Right,
it's
right.
Not. I heard it from Terry Foy on the phone one day, and then I heard it from like five other people.
And we had someone else on here that mentioned that to us, Eric. I don't remember which guy it was. But,
will it conflict with the NLL? Like, what is their schedule?
No, so it will, but the NLL is a fan-driven model, whereas the PLL is a television-driven model.
Right.
So you need fans, and the way it's working, they have apparently the NLL, as you guys like Dane would know, he's more, you know, Canadian guy. They have different start dates that they've already have. They already have a plan in place. So if it pushes, you know, there could be a real need for the PLL to do something. And the only tough part would be is it's not a bubble. You'd have to do a weekend event or a 3-day because guys can't get off from work as much.
Right.
Because guys do have day jobs. I have. Right. I mean, I sell equipment and apparel to sports. My boss wants me there. You know what I mean? It's good for me for business. So, but yeah, that's what I've heard, and I would welcome it. I would be the first person in line saying yes, please.
Yeah.
Can I please coach? Please, please, thank you. Because I didn't even really need to be paid. That shit was fun, boys. It was fun.
What was it like coaching those guys? Because, you know, arguably the best talent in the world out there. And, you know, I'll be honest. Sometimes I saw coaches drawing up plays, and then nobody ran it. They just went out there and did whatever the hell they wanted.
But, you know, it's so funny. Like, those guys get – Ben would be like, I don't understand what we wrote, and the guys aren't running it. And I would – but I look back at my career – Coach Simmons and Desco did that too. I was kind of used to it. To me, you know, it was just, you got to try and make plays. I did learn, you know, that you do got to stroke egos a little bit. They're a little bit different. The generation's different. And all people are different, obviously. You know, the PLL had we were under a crazy time with the BLM movement and all the things that were going on with a pandemic. And, I learned a lot myself about a lot of different things. And But yeah, no, it was awesome to coach such great athletes, to see them. One thing I really took from it was, it really was the best athletes or lacrosse players in the world, because you had guys from Canada, Australia, you know, you had different in America, you had, you know, in the Iroquois Nation, you had all those guys in the league, you know what I mean? So that to me was really incredible to see and to learn about, you know, how the offenses run, how the defenses need to run. You know, you can do a lot of things, guys, with a pro athlete that you can't, that you can't do with a high school defenseman. So it's a different approach. Mm-hmm. And by the way, for that, I was extremely thankful to have Tucker, Jake, and Kevin playing on defense as, you know, Division I defensive coordinators. They were very helpful in helping me make the transition to think my brain outside the box. And I would give them full credit, guys. I was just a guy who managed what the scouting report was, just managed timeouts, talked to them about what was going on. So for me, it was a learning experience and being a coach. So that's what it was, in my end of it. It was exciting, great. And I would look around and say, pinch me all the time.
How frustrating was it? How frustrating was it, though, because you guys weren't getting the W's?
It's pretty frustrating. I'm a different bird. When I lose at anything, it really doesn't bother me. And hear me out. I am a competitor in every which way. But the initial shock of losing does nothing to me. I know that the next day I had to get up and go to work. Now, that comes from losing a mom at a young age where your father told you, you got to get up the next day, you're alive, you got to continue on. So that was like the mindset I grew up with. Where the losing bothers me is a week later. It bothers me immensely. Mm. But it's at a time that's, you know, beyond that. So it was frustrating to lose games. It was frustrating to see at times the arguing that would go on just because everybody was so revved up about losing. That was difficult, to say the least.
Was there a lot of that in the locker room, that kind of thing? Or
No. I mean, just everybody has their normal bickering in locker rooms, mm-hmm. right? And it can be coach on player, player to player, player to coach. It just happens when you're losing, right? When you're winning is the greatest deodorant in the world. You know, if you looked at Andy Towers until the playoffs, Andy Towers was on suicide watch because mm-hmm. he was so upset, and so was his team. But when he started winning, Andy started becoming, right, the typical AT with the great interviews and the way he speaks and how he looks and his presence and how intelligent he is. So, yeah, the frustration, it really was, you know, Steven and Ben got frustrated a lot more, I think, than I did, just because I only had 2 weeks, you know what I'm saying? So my loss stuff doesn't bother me until I'm on the plane flight home,
mm-hmm. gotcha. You
know? Plus, you can't get away from each other, right? I mean, we had other guys on here talk about that. It's like, it's one thing, at, you know, when you lose in college, you go home, maybe you're not around the guys for a couple of days,
good
but
point,
like, you're just living it.
Yeah, you're next to each other, and boy, you're getting a little shit. You're getting the stank eye because you didn't play a guy. I had a blowout. I had a blow up on a player who remained nameless, and it was wrong of me to do it. He was hovering, you know, nitpicking at me, and I lost my shit completely. And I apologized in front of the team because I did it in front of the team. So I apologized in front of the team. And, you know, that's a learning experience, you know, for me as a coach. You know, Tom Mariano has been doing it forever. So Tommy's really smooth, and I'm an emotional person. So my emotions often at times, depending on how the situation goes, I'm usually pretty in control. I rarely have a lapse. Like when I lose it on the sidelines, everybody thinks I'm losing it. I'm not. I'm actually in control. I have a good ability to do that. Like, you know, but I'll argue and fight for everything. Like when we're losing, I would yell at the timers. I would yell at the freaking refs. I would yell at the guys in the box. I would yell at the television people because I'm trying to gain any edge. I mean, like I screamed at the timers because we would go quick whistles, and all of a sudden they screwed up the time, and rightfully so. They were getting the hang of this. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's not the normal timekeepers from stadiums that they're hired. And I was like, what the fuck? And they're like, gee, you. I'm like, no, I don't care. You're giving them an advantage. We're trying to play fast. We're losing here. And I would lose my shit. And people would just be like, this guy's a psychopath.
Right.
No, it's true, though. As a coach, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into the story. My first year coaching high school after Robert Morris.
Oh, God. God.
Like, they were running the box, and there was and Eric, I think you'll kind of, because Eric's son played for me. We had a older woman running the penalty time, and she just would not tell me the penalty time.
Yep.
And I just lost it. Like, I wanted her fired after the game. I said, like, we need new timing people. Let me bring my own people in. This is too big a deal.
I had my niece, thank God. I had my niece.
Yeah. Luckily, she didn't get fired. She didn't deserve it. She was a sweet lady. And
yeah. I mean, yeah, the best is, though, when you get to that point, when you come from coaching club and being at college and, you know, the best is my niece, who's like my third daughter, Julia. The refs would come over and go, Jesus, can you believe this guy? And she'd go, I know. He's my uncle. I see him every day. And they would just, their asses would get pucker tight and be like, oh, shit. And it was so, because I would light an official up like a Christmas tree. But I never had to yell at Julia because she always knew what to give me. She's like, Uncle Rick, this is the time. Uncle Rick, I got, Julia was on point. But I was eating refs' faces anytime I could. You know, and kids' faces, and you kind of mellow after 10 years. Right. You know what I mean? I'm probably going to mellow in the next season compared to my first season because you haven't coached in months.
Right.
So when you're out there, you're just rip roaring to kill.
Yeah. And you're coaching everything. You know what I mean? That's the one thing like worth mentioning. You know, people don't know. Obviously, you coach the PLL, which is a high profile, but head coach in New York. And then obviously, you're pretty involved with your girls as well, right? So it's.
Yeah. I've been. You're doing I've been really lucky. You know, especially with a wife who's so competitive, who played in a, you know, run world championships, won the Pan Am games. You know, my father-in-law is a pro baseball player. My, you know, my father-in-law's dads are pro boxers. The uncles are all in the Boxing Hall of Fame. So, like, my wife's a pretty competitive person. And, you know, according to her, I do nothing for our children. but now she's realized I did. But, yeah, it's been interesting where I've learned, you know, the girls, coaching the girls when they were younger taught me to be positive, right? To learn how to be positive, how to be tough, and understand that they want to be treated a certain way too. You know, you should that really helped me. And then coaching high school boys, they're all dummies. Hmm. They don't listen to you. You got to scare them into listening to you in the beginning. And they'll always respect you because that's how they're built, because you demand it. And then when you go to the pros, you're fighting for respect, and you still are. And I think I gained the guys' respect by showing vulnerability, where I would say, all right, guys, you're running a five-man. This is what you're doing. Like, show it to me. Because I run a five-man differently with more rules. You know what I mean? Or with less rules, with bumps and communication, where they are more structured. So I think admitting my vulnerability helped me. So, you know, the three aspects, Dane – it's an interesting point you bring up. You learn to, it helps shape you, I guess, as a coach, maybe in a better way. I've been very lucky. And then I'm coaching clinics. Like, I do a clinic tomorrow here in Hop Hog. And, you know, I don't hold back on a soul, but it's all about reps, you know, and it's just go, go, go. And I put those on social media and people are like, why do you do that? And I'm just like, number one, so college coaches can see kids that they're working. Number two, I'm pretty secure, and I don't give a shit if someone steals a drill of mine, makes it their own, and calls it the fucking dandy do. I could care less, whatever they call it. I could call it, you know, standard approaches. You can call it this dandy do approach. I don't really care.
Right.
You know, and thirdly, I want to grow the game the best that I can. And it's not for notoriety. You know, I'm a four-time All-American, two-time national champ, two-time high school All-American, world teamer, and I'm not in the Hall of Fame. Right? There's many guys that are in the Hall of Fame ahead of me that I made look silly.
Who do we have to call, Eric?
There is, guys, what I have learned is I'll get in eventually, and I mean that with very much no arrogance. I mean it with confidence. As you get older, you realize the mistakes you made. I made a lot of mistakes. you know, whether it's flicking off a college coach who recruited you and said, don't you wish you recruited me harder after you scored a goal on him, you know, telling one coach to F themselves and laughing at him, or saluting a one-star general, a brigadier general, while you're playing Army when the ball goes out of bounds. Like, all those things don't help you get in the Hall of Fame, guys. So I've learned, but, you know, so I've really tried to be humbled as I've gotten older. And I am old, you know, but I really do think I bring things to the table coaching wise to, you know, in my trainings that no one does, because I always try to think outside the box and build it on a certain platform of reps and intensity. And I've been very fortunate that the PLL picked me up, and I've been very fortunate to coach Angela and Viviana, and they play the game and they're pretty good. Angela, I think, will be an exceptional Division I lacrosse player if she buys in. I mean, you can't teach a lefty, you know, who's 5'8", you know, 160, you know, that shoots 80 miles an hour with her left and 75 with her right, you know, and she can go behind the back. She has great hands. She's strong. My little one will be about 5'10", Viviana, and, you know, she'll be fast. She's a little less IQ than Angela, but she's playing with all the big girls now, and I can already see the improvement.
Well, you know a good coach up there at Stony Brook. I think you might have an in there.
Joe, he's in my freaking.
I wanted to touch base on that, because I saw kind of flip gears from like the PLL to your time at Syracuse, but more so what's going on with Q's now. Because when we were talking about last week, we talked about the Joey Spallina commitment and how big that was for Q's. Yeah. And I saw you kind of running.
Point on that.
Promote a little bit on Twitter, right? Why don't you come win a couple of these? So just talk to us about like your time at Q's, and then obviously seems like there's been like a lull.
There was a lull.
There was a lull, and now there's been a rebirth.
Trust me, I have a radio show. I've been very, very, very critical at times. So I get it. Yeah.
So how exciting is it now? I mean, and I know you won't see those guys in a Syracuse uniform for a couple of years, but this 22 class is coming together, and obviously it's got to make you proud as an alumni.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always bled orange, even been a critic of it. I've never once, even on my radio show, when callers have called in and called for Coach Desko to be let go, or a new coaching staff, a new change, you know, who are you going to replace him with? The guy downstairs, Gary Gate, why does he have to come do it? You know, he's good enough to take that job, but why would Gary want to do that, right? He doesn't need the stress in his life. He's doing great with the girls, and he's probably well paid doing it. You know, for me, I'm excited. I've known, you know, old man Joe since we were 19. And I've known Joey since he was a little kid. And, you know, we've been very fortunate that right there helps you grab others. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
Just like Brennan O'Neill was able to help Duke get a whole bunch of other guys. You know, now you have Sowers, and, you know, Sowers knows he's going to throw the ball into a massive lefty that can finish any way he wants. You know, that helped my best midfielder want to go to Duke. Right. So it's really to see the game change, the way the recruiting game has changed. It's more like 1A football, as you know. It's been exciting for Syracuse. Syracuse was having a great year. I called three of the games on the ACC network. I got a chance to see them firsthand. I'm not everybody's favorite announcer. I've heard,
I think you do a good job.
I appreciate that. Most people think I do a decent job because I'm the guy you could talk to in a bar. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking to you like I'm in a bar. Right. Like, I'm not trying to say this guy shoots like this guy. I'm just saying they're in a 1-4-1, and this is probably going to peel out to an open, and then they're looking for sneaks on the backside. Like, I talk to the fan. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't talk to the dude flipping through the channels that's in the middle of Missouri going, what is this gas tank sport? You know what I mean? So for Syracuse, it has been a great transition over the last couple of years. A lot of new exciting things going on campus. The dome has just got renovated. You know, it's not held up by a bubble anymore. It's a fixed roof. New suites are going to get done. The excitement is back. The one thing I can say that's disappointing from an alumni perspective, and I'll say it, guys, because it wouldn't be me, and you'll be the first person I've ever voiced it to on any type of media, is not trying to go after those firstborn sons. If you look at the tribute that everybody's Powell Lacrosse is doing for Roy Simmons, a quote just yesterday on Twitter was, you know, because you came to Syracuse, you have to give up your firstborn child to the program. And, you know, guys like Roy Culsey's kid, right, Ryan, who's now going to UVA. So I think they're lateral, right? They're not like one's better than the other. It kind of, so, you know, Roy, I got a lot of flack from a lot of guys asking me what the hell's going on. I mean, the guy's a Hall of Famer, he's a legend. You know, Pete Linklip's kid, who was a guy who played with us in the 90s, who was a Midwest, one of the first Midwest guys, you know, his son committed to Michigan. Well, you know, Michigan, I think the defensemen, in my opinion, are as good as the defensemen at Syracuse, judging by what I've seen. You know, Ryan should have been a guy that we recruited. You know, so there's that aspect of it that is still guys being brought up. But all in all.
But steps in the right direction. You got to be happy with
Joey
that.
Joey Spolina is going to. That's the deodorant that covers everything, right, guys? I mean, so and I was, you know, I was around the day Joey visited, and I got a chance to, you know, just pop over and go to lunch with Big Joe while Joe was touring campus, just, you know, so Big Joe didn't lose his mind. So, you know, I popped over, and it's all legal because, you know, I have existing relationship with the guy, and it's just the way it works. But it was certainly fun to see him commit. And I dogged all the Maryland guys in my text because you saw those Maryland guys start tweeting out.
Oh yeah.
I dropped the bomb. I thought, man, the bomb was the two rings, the four All America plaques, and then the legends live here. And then bam, I've been dropping it. I started dropping it. So I've been trying to help with the recruiting, make the guys feel better.
Yeah.
You know what? Right. So trying to make you feel good about playing in a, you know, 50,000 seat dome, you know, when you get 222 inches of snow on average a year.
Right. What was your journey to Syracuse? How did you end up there?
Oh, it's easy. It's New York's team, man.
Right.
Listen to my accent. So right. Easy. No, it was, I was very fortunate. I was one of the top defensemen in the country coming out of high school. I played at Lakeland High School, which was a powerhouse back then in the town of Yorktown. There was two teams, Yorktown, Lakeland. We both went to state championships multiple times. They've won them. We lost them. Jim Egan was a Lakeland alum, Paul Cannon, who lived down the street from me. They were at Syracuse at the time. Syracuse had come off winning, you know, three national championships in a row. They had lost in 90. But I already committed by then. You know, when I went on my visit, like I say to every kid from New York that goes on a visit to Syracuse, you know, that is New York. You know, I am a New Yorker, guys. I think the only other place I could live outside the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, would probably be Florida. And I'd have to live on the East Coast with the rest of the people that
the rest of people from New York.
Yeah. The rest of people that say ball instead of bow. You know what I mean? Like, so for me, it was a simple thing. I went on two visits. I went on no visits except Syracuse.
Wow.
I was recruited by everyone from the start. Everybody, with the exception of UVA, offered me a full scholarship.
Wow.
And then I was going to Syracuse, and what a journey it's been, fellas. A journey it has been.
So club wasn't big then, right? I don't even know if it existed.
No, it was
so
Empire State Games.
So explain that.
Empire State Games are like your state Olympics.
Okay.
So you had regions, right? Hudson Valley, Central. Hudson Valley was like above New York City. Then there was the New York City region. Then there was the Adirondack, which is the Albany to like Utica area to Massachusetts, all the way up to Plattsburgh. And then there was the Central New York region that went like to Hogansburg, all the way down to Binghamton. And then there was the Western region, which was the other side of the United States, the other side of the state, and you pulled the best teams. And that was the creme de la creme of recruiting. I mean, you looked up at a Central Hudson Valley game or a Long Island Hudson Valley game, and there was every single college Division I head coach in the stands. So that was really the biggest recruiting thing we ever did.
And that was in the summer.
Yeah, and it was that way for
recruiting events.
It was that way for 10 years. I mean, there was. I mean, I played with guys in college.
Yep.
Our goalie from West Islip was, you know, he was probably one of the last few guys by 08, 09, where those games started to. I don't know if they're still going on, but they're not.
Nope,
they
have like they have a version of it. It's kind of a watered down version.
Yeah.
Here, you know, in the state of New York, but I mean, I'm not trying to downplay what those kids are. You know what I mean? But it's kind of a watered down version of it. But yeah, that was really it. That was really. I mean, and there was no other recruiting going on.
So, what grade were you in when you got your first offers?
Oh, you didn't do that stuff. So it was like my senior year. UVA came to campus. You know, for a personal visit to high school, me and Christian Johns, who's another All-American, went to Loyola. Loyola came, Syracuse came, Carolina called. The first day, everybody called. I mean, they were trying to get me to play football, at the 1AA's, and then play lacrosse in the 1A. You know, it was everybody and anybody. And my father, my mother had passed away when I was 14, so it was just me and my dad, Freddie B, there. And, you know, they called about dinner time all the time. So, you know, it was a rotary phone. You pick it up. Hey, coach, how you doing? You know, no, I'm just no big deal. I'm sitting down at dinner. No. It's all good. My dad, it's all good. You know, I had UVA call me. Ace Adams called me. Mark Van Arsdale came to our school. Christian Johns was ballsy enough to ask him, hey, you know, coach, what would you offer out? To, you know, one of us right now. And he's like, well, he said, well, Christian, you know, we're an attack. We have a live attackman. We'd probably give you 20-25%. Rick, we need defense when you'd be an 80-100. So phone rings. It's dinner time. I pick it up. My father's like, he doesn't know who it is. I'm like, hey, coach, because I just say, hey, coach, right? You know? No. Okay, coach. Thanks, coach. Doesn't look like I'll be going to your school, but I greatly appreciate your time. Thanks very much. And I just hung up. And I sat down, and my father is looking at me like I have a dick growing out of my forehead. And he's just like, what, like, who was that? I'm like, it was the head coach at Virginia. He's like, excuse me, what? And you told him what? I was like, yeah, dad. Like, he only offered me 20%. He was like, oh, okay. And he went right back to his food. Because my father was, the truth was, I mean, I was my best friend in the world. I miss him dearly, but I'm going to tell you, It was full scholarship or I'm swinging a hammer in the union. Right. Wow. Like, there was no Rick B, you're getting any amount paid for. Screw you. Get a full scholarship because your coach told you should. You didn't work hard enough. Like, all those things. So
no pressure, right? Yeah. No pressure on that one.
Yeah, no pressure when he tells you, by the way, when you're a freshman, I stopped saving for your college because your coach said you're probably going to go to college to play the lacrosse.
Did you have siblings, Rick?
I have an older sister who was an All-American swimmer at York College in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Actually.
Wow.
Yeah. My mom and dad are the epitome of the Westchester County, born and raised, kind of like made good in their lives. So my mom was born in New Rochelle, which is down county, right? Southern Westchester, just outside the Bronx. My dad was born on the Yonkers side of Mount Vernon. And grew up there. My dad's real dad cut out on him when he was 2. My dad lived on a couch till he was 18. My mother's dad died when she was young. My Nana was a bookie who ran a book. And then they moved north. The only ones out of all of my mother's sisters, my mother had 4 sisters, and her last name was Zaccanini. And my last name is Beardsley with a Y. My mother was the only one who married a non-Italian. Out of all of them. And my father was so ostracized, it was hilarious growing up. They got to like him because he was this big massive dude who was pretty kind. But so my family's kind of like that. I always call myself, I'm the Westchester elite. I'm a Westchester because I was born in, you know, Mount Kisco. So I'm the Westchester elite. So when I rolled into Yorktown today, guys, to buy flowers to put in my parents' grave and do the stuff, I rolled in. I was Westchester elite. I didn't care. All I did was go to the florist, stand outside, and then drive to a cemetery. But when I rolled through, I was driving like I was Westchester elite. I had Frank Sinatra, Summer Wind on, the windows down. I was Westchester elite, boys.
That's funny. Awesome. Well, we don't want to keep it. I know that you're busy making deals.
It's me keeping you guys.
No. And but so what's the latest with you? What are you, I mean, you're doing so much now with clinics, with apparel, yeah, with, you know, so just give us the inside of, you know, everyone's got to follow you on Twitter. I mean, you put out some really good stuff. And
well, I put out angry tweets lately, but
yeah, I was just saying the pandemic's got you a little frustrated, I think.
Oh,
right?
I got a little public education is
really your kids are in school, obviously.
They are.
Wow. Okay.
So we're prisoner to three school districts. Tori is a special ed teacher in Marcellus, which is like 30 minutes from our house. Viviana goes to where we go to where we live in North Syracuse. She goes there. She's in fifth grade. Angela's at CBA where I coach. And so we're prisoner to three school districts. And, you know, the pandemic has been it's not frustrating on me. It's more frustrating on the kids. And
sure,
when you see your kid frustrated and start to cry and upset because she doesn't understand something and the teacher's not there to help her, or mom's not there to help her until she comes home, you tend to get angry. You tend to make phone calls. I tend to know lots and lots of powerful people in the state of New York. I'm probably not the guy you want to cross at times, to say the least, but, yeah, I can get there, but yeah, no, it's the latest with me is I'm just working, doing apparel like I have been for Mercury, printing. You know, I've had it's a pandemic. It's a terrible year for most people not selling the sports. I've had a beyond exceptional year. I just picked up Dane's high school. He doesn't know that yet, but I just picked up his account.
Well, look, we'll talk.
And I
we'll
did
talk
yours because before. Remember, I did. Yours
I know.
Wait,
through. I won't mention the other probably because they're probably a competitor.
That's okay.
Now.
Cause they were terrible.
Okay.
But yeah. So that's what I've been doing, and I've been doing. I always do the clinics. It was really interesting for me this year to understand how the rules work with the clinics. It's pretty good right now because I don't ever really. I'm maxed out in my clinics, but the max capacity is at half. So I'm okay. And, you know, you have extra insurance. The kids have to, like, you know, they get the temperatures taken. There's all those little precautions. My kids have been playing, which is good. But that's all I've been doing, man. I've been being
CBA able to get back to on the field. Are you guys on the field?
No, just the regular sports. They are playing soccer. You know, those sports, they are mild impact. Okay. Right now they just started. Our season will start in end of April, you know, push. Football's going into March. It's going to hurt. You know, it's going to hurt a lot of things. And I get it. I have my own personal feelings about, you know, the pandemic and health. And I very well could get COVID tomorrow. And I don't understand why I don't. I have never had it. I was in New York for three months in a row every weekend coaching, you know, 100 to 200 kids a week. Coming back, then going into a bar, then going to Nassau Coliseum and watching games. Like I was the candidate.
Probably did have it. You probably had it, didn't even know it.
Yeah. I mean, like I have allergies right now. So I'm sitting here like, all right, I got a scratchy throat. I got allergies,
right.
But I take allergy medicine. So I know that I'm not sneezing. I don't have a fever. My ears are cold. Like I got all the things, but yeah. So it's this shit's crazy, guys. And
yeah.
I don't worry about me or my financial situation because we do make money doing clinics. I worry about the kids. The kids need this, and they need it badly. And hopefully we can, you know, as a country get through this. It isn't a political thing. I don't give a shit who's in office. I just think we need to help our kids. Right now, forget helping the economy. People are resilient. They'll understand how to make money. People can do that. What you need right now is to help the kids who don't know how to help themselves.
Right.
And no kid at 14 years old knows as much as a 34-year-old guy. So we must help our kids. And sports need to happen, and they can happen safely. Look at football over the country. That's my little advocate thing, boys. I am extremely upset with the state of New York High School Sports Association. I think they're weak. I'm going to say it's the first time I've ever said it out loud. I think they're weak. I think they didn't plan well enough. And on the flip side, I understand what they're doing, but sometimes you can't end what's going on. So that's my flip, guys. I gave my that's my PSA.
Right.
So I can, you know, I can.
And then Rick Beardsley for Office 2024.
Could you imagine me as any type of political?
I would just want to see your commercials. I would just
guys. First of all, number one, I'm too stupid to be in politics. I'll be the first to tell you. Number two, I have way too many skeletons in my past.
Yeah,
that will never happen. You know, Mr. Beardsley, is it true that you took your car and ran it into a dumpster just for fun and then called the police? Yes, it is true. Like, you know, you can't give him anything to run with it, guys. I learned.
Right.
By the way, that never happened, guys. Right. I just want to let you know.
Right. Hey, if they want to follow you on Twitter or Instagram, what is it? What are the
name? My Twitter is at Uncle Ricky Beast, and right. My Instagram is Rick Beardsley, R-I-C Beardsley. And, you know,
they want to buy apparel, or they emailing you? Or
Rick at mercuryprinting.net. Yeah.
Do you guys do an online store as well? Rick, do you guys Do you guys do an online store?
We do all that. Yeah, we have online stores right now. But, dude, why am I pitching work on this? Get the hell out of here.
Hey, look, this is what it's about. I mean, the last 30 seconds is for you to
And then we
get 10%. We get 10%.
Yes, you do get 10%. The last 30 seconds is for me to thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you for having me on. I do appreciate it. It definitely was interesting. You got a little bit more out of me than I probably thought I should have given you, but I went into those things and didn't hold back. So you got the real me.
Yeah. Well, hey, it was more fun than I even anticipated, and I knew it would be a good
You're
time.
You're so full of shit. Oh my God.
Rick, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Everybody follow him on Twitter and Instagram. For Dane Smith, I'm Eric Bickle. That's Rick Beardsley. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.